Support for WPR comes from Viterbo University, with the D.B. Reinhardt Institute for Ethics in Leadership, dedicated to offering virtual lectures with speakers who inspire. More at viterbo.edu/ethics.
Support for WPR comes from Wills on behalf of Wisconsin Public Libraries, offering access to ebooks, audiobooks, digital magazines, and more. Available with a Wisconsin Library card at wisconsinsdigitallibrary.org.
Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 10 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Monday, May the 21st. The Senate begins debate today on a wide-ranging immigration proposal that has drawn fire from both ends of the political spectrum. Conservatives have denounced the deal as another amnesty plan, while some more liberal lawmakers say it is overly harsh on unskilled workers in particular. The proposal would toughen border and workplace enforcement, yet offer legal status and an ultimate path to citizenship to millions of undocumented workers. Supporters say the overall measure is balanced and warn against making changes that could upset that balance. We'll go over the deal that was announced last week by key Democratic and Republican senators and the White House. And we'll wonder what sort of future it may face as the rest of Congress has a say starting today. Our guest teaches immigration law at Marquette University, and we will take your questions and reactions on this proposal to overhaul the immigration system. And we wonder what it is you'd like to see from our lawmakers on this issue. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890-263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest is Ed Filone, Associate Professor of Law at Marquette University. He teaches immigration law. Good morning.
Morning.
Thanks again for being with us.
Always a pleasure.
Let's go over the key elements of this proposal to start. Conservatives have long called for tougher border security. Does this deal provide that?
Well, it's about a third of the bill, if you divide it into three parts, is devoted to increased border security, and it's designed to place obligations on the federal government. Some specific numerical triggers are put in place. 6,000 new border security officers have to be hired. 370 miles of border fence has to be built. 70 surveillance towers. Mm-hmm. 27,000 beds for detention of border crossers, and these numerical triggers have to be put in place before any new visas could be issued. Mm-hmm. So the idea is that this is the enforcement first provision.
Yeah, and it also contains some provisions for better workplace enforcement?
It does, and this is going to be interesting to see if this will work. The bill requires that there be up and running a new system for electronic worker registry, so employers could verify new job applicants. And the idea is that within 3 years, all employees in the United States would have to be verified by their employers. In order to do this, the Department of Homeland Security is going to have to create a massive database of Social Security numbers for everyone in the United States and be able to match those numbers with the correct people. Past employment verification systems have never worked perfectly, and we'll see how people feel about this.
Yeah, and what sorts of hoops need to be jumped through for the so-called pathway to citizenship?
Well, to take these undocumented workers, and the estimates are somewhere around 10 to 12 million undocumented currently, to take them and to integrate them into a lawful status, the bill would create a new Z visa, which would be available immediately for these undocumented. It would give them lawful status. They would have to pay somewhere around $5,000 in fines and additional $1,000 or so in fees for each one of these visas. They would have to pass an English proficiency exam. They would have to pass a criminal background check that would disqualify anyone with a record. The head of the household would have to return to their home country to apply for permanent residency in the home country. And then while the holders of these visas would be legal and not subject to deportation, they could not move to the next step, which would be permanent residency, until the current backlog, all the people, maybe up to 4 million people who have already applied for visas and are waiting in line, as they say, until that backlog is taken care of, none of these new Z visa holders could get permanent residency. And that process could take anywhere from 8 to 12 years before any of these people start to see a permanent residency. And then the most controversial part of this compromise is that rather than having pure visa awards, we're moving to a point system where permanent residency would depend on how well you score on a point system based on your education, your job experience, other factors. So there would be that additional hurdle of showing that you merit a mm-hmm. permanent residency.
And that is instead of placing more weight on family ties?
Yeah, and also employment sponsored. The two main philosophies for legal immigration, one has always been family ties, the idea that we want people who are already here legally to be able to bring over family members, that creates sort of an instant support system for new immigrants, and it also reunifies families and avoids people being split across borders. And the second is labor certification, where employers would determine what workers they wanted and would sponsor those specific workers. The point system, for many years, people have advocated moving to a point system. They say that it doesn't make sense to let in new immigrants based on family ties, and that the labor certification system has always been sort of gamed by employers. But what this does is this creates a pool where the government decides what qualities or characteristics new immigrants should have and prioritizes visas on that basis.
Mm-hmm.
And employers lose the flexibility to hire specific people. Instead, they are subject to hiring whoever's in the country based on government criteria. And family members lose the flexibility to bring over, say, adult children or brothers and sisters, or even there'll be a cap on the ability to bring over parents.
We're going to take a short weather break, and then we will continue talking with Ed Filone, Associate Professor of Law at Marquette University, about this bipartisan deal on immigration that has been announced by key Democrats and Republicans and the White House, but is facing all sorts of criticism from both sides of the political spectrum. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. It's coming up now on 19 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Monday, May the 21st. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you along and hope you stay tuned. It's At Issue with Ben Marins this afternoon between 4 and 6. According to Ben's guest after 5, America isn't the land of opportunity it once was. That's after 5 this afternoon. We're talking about the new immigration deal, the proposal announced late last week that the Senate begins debating today. Ed Filone, our guest, Associate Professor of Law at Marquette University. He teaches immigration law there, talking about what this proposal includes and where the bones of contention are. And we're welcoming your questions and reactions to it as well, and wondering if you think this is a good compromise or not, and what it is you'd like to see from our lawmakers on this issue. 1-800-642-1234, toll free from anywhere. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. We'll get to your calls in just a moment. But first, Professor Filone, so you talked about this point system being one of the most controversial aspects of this new proposal, new deal. I mean, is that the biggest problem with it as far as you're concerned?
As far as I'm concerned, well, I think that the biggest problem is that what we have here is a a bill and a pressure for immigration reform that built over some time, and there were really two pressure points. One was from employers. Our economy has a demand for unskilled workers, and employers who wanted to hire unskilled workers felt there had to be a legal means for these people to come into the country. And one of the responses is the guest worker provisions for unskilled workers, which are in here, and then for the undocumented to legalize would also provide unskilled labor. The second pressure point was for the undocumented, the family members of these people and friends who wanted these people to come out of the shadows and to become integrated into society. And I think that the real problem here is that these provisions, although they create a means for these people to avoid deportation, they don't really fully integrate them. They create almost a permanent class of guest workers who are here temporarily and then have to leave, and then the Z visa holders who have to wait 8 years, maybe 13 years, before they may or may not be able to become permanent residents and then later citizens. And so we really will have this permanent second-class category of people, and that'll be something new for our country. We've never been like Europe, where we've had this permanent separate class of workers who are here temporarily, who are not citizens. And it'll be something different for our society to be divided that way.
Yeah. The guest worker program would require you could work for 2 years and then you'd have to go back home and apply again?
Yeah. And you know, employers are not necessarily happy with this because they want to be able to hire guest workers but then train them, promote them, keep them here. They don't necessarily want a revolving door where every 2 years the people they've hired and trained leave. So employers would rather see a more permanent entryway for unskilled labor. And I think that makes sense. The real fear is that these guest workers come, they're supposed to stay for 2 years, then leave for a year before they can reapply to come back under another two-year visa. The real question is, well, will they leave? They'll come for 2 years, and then maybe they'll stay.
Yeah.
What's the incentive for them to leave?
We have some callers. Let's go to the phones. John in Verona is first. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Hi. The thing of it is we've got the laws on the books right now, and they're just dodging around it. The people come here from wherever for a job. All you got to do is get a deal with the Social Security card that they can check, and a guy hands a guy a Social Security card with a lot of zeros on, and you hire him. Well, he had a Social Security card. What they want is cheap labor with a capital cheap. And you got to nail the employers that hire them. The guy says, "Well, I didn't know. I work. They're hardworking. Aren't Americans hardworking? Aren't Norwegians hardworking? We had the amnesty deal in the 80s, and they said we've got the problem solved. That was 2 million. Now you're talking 20, and I'll make you closer to 25."
Yeah. So what do you think of this deal announced last week, John?
It's a bunch of I can't use the word on the radio, young lady. The thing of it is the Democrats want votes and the Republicans want slaves.
Well, Ed Flon, what's your reaction to John's reaction?
Well, I don't know if I'd agree with the votes and slaves analogy, but I think he makes, you know, the valid criticism. We have a situation where our economy, for whatever reason, for better or for worse, and it's indicative of other problems, education problems, you know, employment problems, but the fact is that our economy has evolved to the point where there is a demand for unskilled laborers that the domestic labor pool is not satisfying. Maybe employers should pay more. Maybe it's related to the spiraling health costs. There's all kinds of other societal issues here. But in the meantime, there's a real pressure for unskilled labor. And as long as those jobs are here, and as long as there's not aggressive enforcement against employers, which certainly except in election years is missing, people are going to come here for those jobs. And you can't fight economic incentives like that. People were just going to follow the jobs for their best interest. And the hope was that a guest worker program would ease some of this pressure and provide a legal means for this need to be met. I'm not sure that this version of a guest worker program is really going to accomplish that.
Thank you, John. Anne in Madison is with us now. Hi, Anne.
Hi. Well, I don't believe in these guest worker programs. I've seen them in Europe, and it creates a permanent temporary underclass. It's really ugly and undemocratic. I don't think this bill will work. I think it's an effort on the part of the Senate to avoid dealing with the war and with habeas corpus and with torture and with all the terrible things that have been done under this administration. And I agree. Actually, it's just been said, but the way to stop illegal immigration from our southern border is first to repeal NAFTA, which makes job conditions impossible for people south of the border and for people north of the border. The only beneficiaries are corporate CEOs and stockholders, and the way to end it, too, is to fine or even jail corporate owners at least $25,000 to $30,000 per illegal immigrant, and that would end it probably in 2 weeks. This bill is just, it's a distraction, and it's a really ugly bill, I think.
Professor Fallon?
Well, I think that, the real challenge here with immigration is it gets tied to so many other issues, and I certainly agree that the benefit to the U.S. society has been that everyone within our border who's here lawfully has been, relatively equal in the law, and that certainly is unique about our society and not something that we should turn our backs on. The other aspect that is difficult is, if you remember about 6 months ago or so, there were some raids on meatpacking plants in the upper Midwest, and a lot of undocumented workers rounded up and employers fined for employing them. But many of those companies said, well, if we can't employ undocumented, we're going to move our production south of the border, and we'll do our meat processing in Mexico and ship the meat into the United States, which NAFTA would allow. And that's the problem here is, do we have these unskilled jobs in the U.S. where at least the workers are paying their taxes and living and, paying sales tax, buying homes, et cetera, or do a lot of these unskilled jobs because of labor costs, because of the cost of health care, get moved overseas? And then you lose that tax base, and that's not a good result either. And that's one of the tough problems here.
Do you know, Professor Fallon, what sort of reaction is coming from, say, Mexico on this plan?
Well, there's two aspects. One is the Mexican government, which any system where Mexican workers can come to the United States and can then remit money back to Mexico is very helpful to the Mexican government. They have far too many people for the jobs available. It relieves all kinds of social and economic pressures on their country if people can leave Mexico, come to the United States to work, and send money back home. In terms of family members, individuals, mm-hmm. This is really sort of half a loaf. It's not the full integration into society. There's quite a long wait before any of the undocumented actually can become permanent residents. I think that what is really driving this, the people marching in the streets on May Day, tens of thousands in Milwaukee, what they want is simply a recognition that a lot of these undocumented are related to people who are here legally.
I need to jump in because we're at news time, and then we'll talk more with Professor Ed Fallon. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 6:36 on this Monday morning, May the 21st. We're talking about the deal announced last week by key Democratic and Republican senators and the White House, the immigration overhaul, which has faced criticism from all sides of the political spectrum since it was announced, bipartisan opposition to this bipartisan deal. We're wondering why that is, going over the key elements of the plan, and welcoming your questions and reactions for our guest. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. The bill would toughen border and workplace enforcement yet it would also offer legal status and an ultimate path to citizenship for millions of undocumented workers. We are talking with Ed Falone, Associate Professor of Law at Marquette University. He teaches immigration law. And our next caller is Tom in Burlington. Hi, Tom. You're on the air.
Good morning. One of the things is we are creating another subclass of lazy teenagers in our society. When they say they will do jobs no one else will do, well, these are entry-level jobs that 25 years ago a young person would start out at the bottom and learn the dignity of work, and then you work your way up, you work your way through school. There's no question that the illegal aliens are taking jobs away from the young people and Americans. The roofers, they're getting in the drywall business. Yeah. We maybe should use the Canadian model as our model for dealing with seasonal workers. When you talk about a seasonal worker, then you talk about people taking permanent jobs and staying here. And one of the big, with this bill coming up, one of the big loopholes has been the fact that a person could hire somebody without asking them their Social Security number if you just hired them as an independent contractor. With this new bill coming in here, they will have to give their Social Security number, and that number will be checked. But there's just no question. It's the saddest thing in the world to see our young people. They're not getting these little jobs, and these people really are taking jobs away from Americans. And we're not helping Mexico. 98% of Mexico is owned by 2% of the people. It's an overpopulation problem that they really should deal with, and we're enabling this government there to not deal with the real problem.
Professor Falone?
Well, there's a lot of issues raised. I don't know if I can address them all. I think that, you know, nationwide our unemployment rate is somewhere around 4%. So it's very hard to get to full employment because not all the labor is where it needs to be, and so 4% is considered roughly full employment. So it's increasingly hard to say that U.S. workers can fill all of these unskilled jobs and even young teenagers. A lot of these jobs are difficult jobs. Sometimes they're seasonal work. Sometimes it requires, you know, for agricultural work, it may require, you know, living in relatively substandard housing and in the fields. It's tough work. If you're not coming from another country where you have a different quality of life expectation, where, you know, if you've grown up in the United States, these jobs are not attractive. And I'm not sure that we could ever reach 100% employment in the U.S. There's always going to be a demand for some unskilled labor from overseas.
Next, we go to Linda in Monroe. Hi, Linda. You're on the air.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, Professor Pallone. I agree with the last caller. I heard over the weekend it said Democratic Senator Byron Dorgan is against this present bill. I am, too, because I think it's going to pull our minimum wage down and bankrupt our unions. Now, I think if Mexico wants to solve their problem, that they should get unions down there.
Well, it would be great if we could force other nations to reform and dictate how they're going to change their economy and their political structure. Unfortunately, oftentimes Mexico complains because of their border with the United States. Well, you know, it works both ways. We suffer with the Mexico that's there. And we can't force Mexico to reform. Some people would like to and think that we have the influence to do that as a nation. The risk is instability in Mexico, a left-wing government, political instability. I don't think we want that. And so to a certain degree, allowing the Mexican government to export some of their problems to the U.S. is actually in the U.S.'s political interest.
Thank you, Linda, for the call. We had another caller who couldn't hold, Art from Appleton, who was concerned what effect this might all have on the Social Security system, saying that this is that the Social Security system will be overtaxed with new immigrants who will be given benefits. Any idea what will happen with the Social Security system with this?
Well, actually, most observers think that immigration is the key to saving Social Security. The Social Security system pays out benefits to older workers. Most immigrants, the undocumented, the unskilled laborers, are going to be younger. They're going to be the people who are actually going to be paying into the system that'll be paying out benefits to the retiring workers. Without substantial immigration in the coming decades, it'll be really difficult for Social Security to meet those benefit payments. So most observers think that increased immigration of young labor, which is what primarily this is, people don't, you know, cross the Rio Grande in the dead of night when they're in their 60s, most people think this will actually be a net benefit for Social Security.
Yeah. Looking at a news story on the announcement of this this deal last week, Senator Edward Kennedy, Democrat, Massachusetts, his party's lead negotiator on this deal, called this an example of the politics of the possible, while conservative John Kyle of Republican of Arizona said it was the best opportunity for a bipartisan solution to the nation's immigration problems. Is it or is it not extraordinary that these two sides have gotten together on something like this?
Well, I think it is extraordinary in today's environment that you can get the two sides of the political spectrum to agree on anything. I think the real risk here is that in sort of the Washington, D.C. bubble, the desire to make a deal has led to compromises and some inconsistent approaches being cobbled together in one bill, and they got their deal, but you know, it's a deal now that no longer really makes a lot of policy sense. You have to either go with the family reunification approach, the more liberal approach, or you have to go with the enforcement only, no guest worker approach. It's very hard to take two ideologically distinct and opposite philosophies and cobble them together in a compromise. What you get is something like this bill where everyone ticks at it. So it's a political deal. In Washington, D.C., I think they're all very proud they were able to reach an agreement, but outside of Washington, people are wondering, you know, whether it's really going to work.
Now, what do you say to those who say that, especially those on the Democratic side of this issue, are hoping to please a lot of these immigrants with this deal, and they want the 12 million workers to be voting Democratic?
Well, I mean, I think that's the hope. I mean, this is the demographic bubble that it keeps growing, and it's up in play. These are voters who tend to have sort of traditional family values in the sense of valuing education and employment and high church membership. On the other hand, a lot of them are, you know, potential Democratic voters, so they could go either way. Both parties would like these voters. I think that, you know, what's going to happen if this bill passes is that this pressure is not going to go away. You have a growing proportion of the population that wants some of their family members, their friends, to be able to come out of the shadows, to be able to fully integrate into society. And this is a very long-term, phased-in integration. And so that pressure, you know, when are they going to be able to vote? When are they going to be a full member of society? That pressure is going to continue to build, and this bill is not going to relieve that.
We're talking with Ed Filone, Associate Professor of Law at Marquette University. He teaches immigration law there, talking about this bipartisan deal on immigration reform that was announced late last week, and wondering what you think about it, what questions you have about it. It's a bipartisan compromise, but it's facing bipartisan opposition. And we wonder if you support this plan or not. Why or why not? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. And now we have open lines in Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Good to have you along on this Monday, May the 21st, about 13 minutes now before 7 o'clock. Stay tuned for the State Capitol Report after 7 o'clock every Monday after 7. We review the big news of the week from the State Capitol and preview the issues that state officials will be taking up in the week to come. We'll do that with Wisconsin Public Radio State Government reporter Sean Johnson coming up after 7. We're also going to be welcoming in the Secretary of the DNR and other guests to talk about this deadly fish virus that was discovered in the past week in Wisconsin waters. threatening our ecology, our tourism, and fishing industry. We'll talk about the VHS virus and efforts to control the spread of the virus coming up after 7:30. We're talking about the immigration deal, the new immigration bill that the Senate begins debate on today. Ed Filone, our guest, associate professor of law at Marquette University. And before we go back to the phones, Professor Filone, what you know, you follow politics too. It doesn't look like this bill's going to go anywhere, does it?
Well, it's sort of an open question if the White House can deliver 70 Republican votes in the House of Representatives. It may actually pass the House. It would be close. I think there seems to be enough support to maybe get it through right now. The question is, in the next 4 or 5 weeks, while it's debated and various amendments are put forward, can the interest groups on the left and the right create enough controversy to, you know, effectively derail it in the meantime?
Do you see any amendments that that might be added that would make it more passable?
Well, you know, it's such a hodgepodge. Any one of these elements, for example, the point system that's being inserted, that you would have to score a certain number of points to get a visa based on job or education or other criteria. There's a million different ways you could play with that point system. You could raise the number that people have to meet. You could lower the number. But, you know, you start to do that, then the whole compromise gets out of kilter. If you make it too difficult on one end, then another provision becomes problematic. So I think any amendment that significantly changes the compromise could doom the whole thing.
Yeah. The Senate plans to open debate today on the bill and consider amendments throughout the week. Majority Leader Harry Reid has set Memorial Day as a deadline for completing the measure. But many are saying that it's doubtful it can be finished that quickly. And Harry Reid, for that matter, has some serious concerns about the proposal as is. Tim in Kenosha, hi, you're on the air.
Thank you. I guess I reacted to the comment that that migrant labor is taking away jobs from particularly the youth in our society. And I find that to be questionable. For the fact that my family is involved in agriculture in Iowa, and I know they've tried to hire local students to work on their farm, seed corn industry, that sort of thing. They go as far as to raffle off televisions for attendance. They've raised the pay. They still weren't able to cover the job and had to go to immigrants, and they do a fine job. The same thing true out west in the fruit industry. I do believe that their immigrants are being exploited cost-wise, but if you look around, people involved in labor, the hardworking people, are the immigrants. I just I had to take exception to that comment that they're taking away local jobs. Why aren't the local people stepping up and competing for the jobs? I don't think it's happening.
Yeah, Professor Filone?
Well, you know, I think that if you really believe in a market-based system, I think you can't have the government trying to match particular workers with particular jobs. It's not going to be efficient. You sort of have to let employees find the jobs and the employers find the employees. And I think, you know, a lot of this is what's driving what's going on. It's really difficult to take the excess of unskilled workers in urban areas and get them out into the countryside where a lot of these farms are and towns in the country are losing population and the jobs are there. And you have the real problem of health care costs, which you know, really are a burden on hiring and make hiring a legal U.S. citizen oftentimes very expensive compared to other alternatives. And so there are a lot of issues that we need to address as a society that play into this demand for undocumented labor.
Thank you very much, Tim, for the call. In fact, I thought I saw a recent news report about how, since there has been more of a crackdown on border security, that there actually are a lot of employers that were hurting right now for the unskilled labor that even provided by undocumented workers. There weren't as many undocumented workers taking these jobs.
Yeah, it is a problem in certain areas. I mean, you know, one of the ironies is that when there is a crackdown in a particular geographic area and sort of the undocumented population goes into hiding, you get the immigration service gets a lot of complaints from employers saying, my business is shut down, I have no one to work for me, and you're costing me money every day, you're going to put me out of business. And so everyone is in favor of tough enforcement until it's their workers that are gone and it's their business that suffers. And you've seen that a lot with this crackdown on the border, tougher enforcement, especially in border areas where a lot of jobs rely on day laborers or people who cross temporarily.
I wonder what your reaction is to those conservative lawmakers who are saying this is amnesty pure and simple, amnesty by another name.
Well, I think it is an amnesty in the sense that we're taking people who have no legal right to be in our country and we're providing a means for them to stay. I think the risk on the conservative side is that they become critics who no longer have any productive proposal for how to deal with the problem. We have 10 to 12 million people present in the U.S., undocumented status, no realistic possibility of identifying them, rounding them up, and forcibly removing them. What are you going to do? And I think that in some parts of the Republican Party, immigration has simply become a boogeyman issue, something they use to whip up a fervor to gain political votes. And, you know, the risk is that they're really not trying to solve the problem or offering any productive solutions. It's merely a way to rally the troops politically, and that doesn't help anything.
Let's take some more calls. Ben in Rising Sun. I love the name of that community, Ben.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I would like to echo the previous caller a little bit, too. I am in agriculture here, and but also take issue with the undocumented workers are taking young people's jobs because, you know, we hire a number of people every summer to do, you know, harvesting vegetables and whatnot, and it's terribly hard work, and it's really hard to find anybody, young or old, that wants to do this kind of work and wants to do it, you know, for the kind of prices that people don't want to pay $2 for an apple or a head of broccoli or whatever. They want it cheap, but and they also don't want undocumented workers in their country, but they want the cheap services they provide, and I think it's time people need to start realizing that you can't have it both ways.
Yeah. A brief reaction, since we kind of covered that territory last call.
Well, I mean, and I think the consumer issue is a good one to raise. If we can't grow these agricultural products in the U.S. because it's too expensive, we'll see more fruit from Latin America, fruit from other countries being imported to the U.S., and those agricultural jobs will disappear altogether.
Thank you, Ben. Raj in Menasha. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, I was telling that this will be the best bill Congress can ever pass. You see all that money going to Social Security because those guys won't get any benefited minimum for 15 years from the social services. And how much new houses will be bought and furniture, cars, they are having a very positive effect on the economy.
Yeah.
These congressmen pass a lot of many useless bills. This bill is the best bill they can ever pass to boost the economy of this country.
Thank you very much, Raj. Professor Fallon?
Well, the best bill they can pass, I suppose that may be an accurate description. I'm not sure from a policy perspective it's the best policy, but, you know, political reality being what it is, you know, maybe you have to accept imperfect solutions that are not what in an ideal world you would get.
And Tom in Mequon. Hi, Tom. We're almost out of time.
Okay. It seems to me that the major point that's being overlooked is that it's an economic point for the American working people, and that the
the rich Republicans and the Democrats, the shameless Democrats who want more voters, want to dilute the labor pool, which lowers working people's pay. And I think most American working people are very upset about this. And, you know, to say that it's not that way is just foolishness.
Yeah. Professor Fallon?
Well, I think that there's a lot of pressure on the middle class, and this is not necessarily going to help that. It's, again, there's so many societal issues that need to be addressed, the cost of education, the cost of health care, that really the cost of living for the middle class keeps going up. This is not going to help that. And at some point, hopefully our society will deal with these other issues.
Thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Ed Fallon is an associate professor of law at Marquette University. He teaches immigration law, talking with us about the immigration reform deal that the Senate takes up today. The Senate plans to open debate today on the bill and consider amendments through next week. Majority Leader Harry Reid has set a Memorial Day deadline for completing the measure. The House would take it up later. Nancy Pelosi has told President Bush she won't bring a bill up unless he can promise at least 70 Republicans will support it. And President Bush says he's eager to sign this measure into law by August. We'll keep an eye on it and an ear on it. Thanks to Leo Duran and Karen Prager for producing the hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.